Franz Krummer's Second Symphony with the London Mozart Players.
89.3 FM WHFR Dearborn. That's the station that you're listening to, and we're so glad you're there. Good day. I'm Susan McGraw, WHFR General Manager. It is a pleasure to welcome you to our airwaves. If you've got a business or an organization and you would like to get the word out in a more in-depth way, particularly during these challenging economic times, well, WHFR underwriting or sponsorship might just be the thing for you. It is a very cost-effective way to get the word out about your business or organization to wonderful listeners. Listeners that support the independent alternative programming here at WHFR and are very loyal and very receptive to what we do. If you'd like to learn more about how cost-effective underwriting can be and how it truly supports this station here at WHFR, we would love to talk with you. Give me a call, 313-845-9842. That's 313-845-9842.
Spooky Dinois is the finest cat in town. Her silky black fur is like an evening gown. And much to every tomcat's delight, she sings her heart at every Saturday night down at the alley where all the cool cats go. Spooky Dinois can do a catwalk so feline. Whatever your plan, she's sure to undermine. The band is swinging to a barrel beat. A tough little kitty who lands on her feet. Swishing her tail, she purrs, "I'll see you after the show."
Welcome to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I am Susan Morell, and today we are talking with a very special guest. Her name is Becky Robinson. She is the president of Alley Cat Allies. We're talking to her long distance on the phone. What state are you in, Becky?
I am in Bethesda, Maryland.
Okay, you are in Maryland.
Right outside of Washington, D.C.
That's a very good location for pet lovers. I want to welcome you to Pet Lovers Lane.
Glad to be here.
Yes, and I'm glad we finally made our connection. We had little technical difficulties, as they say, with the telephone. But that can happen, even in these days of high-tech phones, right? And for people who are listening who are not familiar with Alley Cat Allies, my understanding is that you are one of the leading cat advocates in the United States. Is that correct?
Yes, we started about 19 years ago when I guess very few people had even read and seen the word feral as in feral cat. That was one of our first goals, was that people learn about what these cats are. They're domestic cats, but they're not socialized.
Okay, so you said that they are domestic cats?
Uh-huh. They all cats that you see, whether they're living outside or sleep on your head at night, are domestic cats, as mine does.
Okay.
So it's the same species. That was the first confusing thing, is that there was a lot of misinterpretation about what these cats were, and that there was some misconceptions that they weren't even protected by law. And indeed, they are protected by law. And there are anti-cruelty laws that protect domestic cats in every state in the Union and the District of Columbia. Whether it is a feral cat or a lost stray cat or a pet that's an owned cat, that law protects them equally.
Okay, I guess I'm the first one who has a misunderstanding about what is a feral cat, because my understanding of a feral cat was that a feral cat is a wild cat. Is that
no,
right?
No, and in fact, that's often the word, and in the describing what these cats are and how they act wild. I think that that's where the misinterpretation comes in. I think that there's domestic cats that are not domesticated in the case of feral cats, and there are domestic cats who are certainly of the domestic species. They're not domesticated, and so therefore they're acting like wildlife, but they're not wild, and they're not a wild species at all. They are domestic animals.
Okay, a wildlife species is a kind of a different definition.
Well, it's very much. It's a the animals that we know that we have domesticated over time, you know, horses, cows, and in the case of cats, this is the one species that's been studied a little bit more recently, but we still don't know quite a bit. So one of the things that I thought, and that we all probably thought, and I can ask you this, Susan, when were they domesticated? When were cats domesticated?
Probably thousands of years ago.
What I had learned that they were domesticated during the time of Egypt. Roughly 4,000 or 5,000 years ago. But now, new research is now telling us that they found on an island a human skeleton, an archaeological dig, found a cat's skeleton very few inches. I think it was 18 inches or something next to near human skeleton. And that was a dig that they determined was 10,000 years old. So we now know that this is an animal that has been domesticated near us, and there was a DNA study that was published, and that we know a little bit more about where they descended from, that they are now they're truly a domestic species. But the interesting thing is that the scientists who have written about the domestic cat and the fact that they can live in a feral state, that's one way of describing them, they live in a feral state. So it's domesticated gone wild is the definition of feral, F-E-R-A-L.
Oh, okay, domesticated gone wild. Right. Yeah, that part I get.
So we now know that more about them, but, you know, this is the other thing. This is an animal that some scientists explain that they domesticated themselves, and so their relationship with us is much different than a lot of animals that have come into our world. As domestic animals, they have chosen to be around us because they are opportunists. It was a good lifestyle for them. And as far as in the United States, the pet cat is the number one animal. There's more pet cats than dogs in homes. 82 million. We just published this in JAVMA. Alley Cat Allies did a study. It's now estimated that there's 82 million.
That's a good number. That's a good number.
Uh-huh. And that's more than dogs. But at the same time, that's not the entire cat population. The entire cat population is made up of cats in homes, stray cats, and feral cats. And some scientists estimate that there are as many feral cats as there are pet cats, or as many cats living outside as there are pet cats inside.
And the numbers that you are referring to are just for the United States.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
So there are cats all over the world.
There are cats all over the world.
And we know a lot about, and you brought up the Egyptian cat. Yes, the Egyptian cat is a very famous cat, and the cats were worshipped back in those times. And, you know, we all have our own little Egyptian statues of cats, right?
Well, people, you know, we are a nation of cat lovers. We just adore cats, and not only are we bringing them, this is the other thing that our study showed that I thought that you and your listeners would be interested in. It is, I think, 34% of cats in homes, 34% of people who have a cat say that they obtain a cat as a stray. So a lot of people are bringing them into their homes, that they're finding these porch cats, they're finding them as kittens, feral litters of kittens,
right.
And they're bringing them in.
That's me.
And that's you.
That's me. That's how I started. The stray cat population is a tremendous problem. It's an overpopulation problem. And perhaps that's one of the reasons why you started Alley Cat Allies. Is that, am I right?
Well, actually, the reason, what I always explain is the reason that we started is, you know, that the three of us that started the organization, we knew that cats were killed in shelters. I grew up with a family that started a humane society in central Kansas. And we knew that it was routine and it was the policy throughout the country, shelters everywhere, if there were cats brought in and if they were not socialized, that they were killed. And so we were aware of that when we realized in Washington, D.C., in an alleyway, that we saw some beautiful tuxedo black and white cats, started feeding them. We actually discovered that there were people feeding them, the residents, and we obtained humane box traps and took them to a veterinarian, and within no time, people were calling us saying, how did you do this? We're caring for cats. We want to do the same. And that's when we realized that these cats have allies. Despite the fact that there is this policy that's in place and has been in place for decades, we were not going to trap those cats. When we found those tuxedo cats in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., we had no intentions of trapping them and taking them to a shelter. We knew that they would be killed, and they were beautiful, healthy cats, and they were of all ages. They were certainly reproducing. There were litters. two of those kittens went home with me from that alleyway, but we knew that people wanted to protect them because they found us. We had not yet started. We had not yet formed Alley Cat Allies, and we had phone calls from all over the region, including calls from across the country. People somehow found our number, and we don't know how. And they wanted to know what was it that we were doing to help the cats, because they had cats like that in their neighborhoods. They weren't going to trap them and take them to the shelter either. So that was really what motivated us. And it was very, very soon thereafter that we created a network. We put those people in touch with each other. Some of them already knew how to trap, and they knew what a box trap was. And others didn't know anything about these cats. They could barely touch them. Sometimes, as you know, you start feeding them. And sometimes a short period of time, you can touch some of them. But there are feral cats that probably have never been touched by humans and probably never will be. So we created fact sheets on the how-tos of trap, neuter, release. And that was a methodology that was already being carried out and promoted by shelters and veterinarians in many parts of Europe. So that's what really prompted us to find a way to help people protect these cats.
Well, let's explain to our listeners, because I don't think everyone is aware of what exactly is the trap, neuter, release program.
Sure. In Europe, and then now for almost 20 years in the United States, when you can't touch a cat, you need to get him to a veterinarian. The best way to do that is that you get a humane box trap that's painless, and you bait it, and they walk inside, and when they step on the very far back, there's a treadle, a plate, and the back door goes down. And that's when you can then take them to a veterinarian, where now there are spay-neuter clinics designed just for feral cats, and the veterinarians have the protocol that they know that they sedate the cat by giving them an injection, so they can never touch the cat unless he's sedated. So they stay in the box trap the whole time until they're sedated. And then the whole neuter part is that they're examined, they're spayed or neutered, they're vaccinated against rabies, and they are ear-tipped. So while they're sedated, while they're under anesthesia, the very small part of their left ear, the tip of it, is clipped off, and that's their ID because they can't be collared. They can't wear tags. Some clinics also, in addition to clipping the ear, ear tipping is what it's called, is that they also microchip them. And then the cat goes back in the trap. They wake up. They're held that night, and they're returned to their very original site. They're returned to their colony, and that's what cats live in. Dogs live in packs. Cats live in colonies. And that's how you go about seeing that there's no reproduction. You trap all of those cats in a colony, whether there's 5 or 10 or 20, and you take them to a veterinarian, and in many cases, there are clinics that allow you to trap all of them at once. We've done that. Alley Cat Allies offered a clinic for 10 years, and we still have a clinic that we finance that someone that wants to trap all of them at once, and there's a way to do that. You know, you think, how can you trap a cat? Aren't they very smart? Well, they are very smart, and the trick to it is to really have them be quite hungry. You withhold food for a day. And so,
yes, I did that to my little...
Have you done that?
Yeah, well, I did that to my little patio cat, and I actually called your organization and got some advice from other rescue groups around the area. This cat, I've been feeding her for 5 years. She's been on my patio, and I've been feeding. You can't touch her. Here's what I did, and you can give me feedback on what I did. I didn't follow all of your advice, you know. I put her, in a trap. I took her to the vet, got her fixed, got her shots, and I brought her home, and I put her in a spare bedroom, and I tried to domesticate her. Mm-hmm. She did not adapt. I kept her in there for several months, and that's really too long of a period of time. I realize that now. And then finally I realized she wasn't, she just wasn't going to adapt, and then I let her back out again. And I didn't see her for a whole week. But then after a week, she came back. And so she's still here. Go ahead and comment.
Oh, well, I think that this is not atypical, that a lot of people that call us, they feel very strongly that they want, there's nothing wrong with knowing that if there is a cat and if he or she is socialized or is a stray that needs to be, basically re-socialized, that is a process that you go through to socialize them and get them used to being in a home. But for feral cats, it's next to impossible for most of those cats.
Well, what she did was she tried to break out the window.
Oh, I totally believe that. They're very frightened. I think that in terms of your original comment, aren't they wild? And I think that what we do need to think about in the mentality of them is that these animals, their mindset is like a wild animal. They are not happy being inside.
She was not happy at all.
And their mindset is that, A, this is a very scary situation. You know, the fear sets in, and they have a great deal of fear, just the whole process of being captured and confined. And that's when it's also kind of dangerous, because people think, well, once you get them inside, then they'll just calm down and you can pet them, and nothing is further from the truth.
Oh, no.
They hide under the bed, or they attempt to escape. And the handful of people that I have talked to, the tons of people I've talked to over the years, but many of them have attempted to bring the cat inside, and they think they can just release it in a room, and their window has been cracked.
Oh, yes.
It's not been open, but it's been cracked, and they're amazed to find out that the cat got out. And so the cats, they're very, very, very strong-willed in terms of wanting to get back out.
Oh, yes. This cat knew me, had already known me for almost five years. I don't remember how many years it's been now.
But a long time.
She knows me. She will come up to me and seek out her food when she's really hungry. She's been on my patio, and I've made a little house for her out there during the winter with hay, and she's had tons of litters of kittens out there. And I just had to stop her at some point. I said, I cannot go on with all these kittens. This is insane policy for me to constantly be trying to find a home for these kittens, and you can't find a home for all of them, and then you have to, some of them, take them to a shelter, and it's a very sad process. And then right away, you know, she's having at least two to three litters a year of 4 to 5 kittens. That's a lot of kittens.
Right. So there are a lot of, you know, information out there. Some of it's not very accurate, but there is some information out there about if you have two cats and how many cats their reproduction over a period of 7 years. Recently, we had a veterinarian examine this, and it is true that cats reproduce a great many kittens. Like, even in, as you said, 1 year, they can have two litters. So a typical litter is anywhere from 3 to 5 kittens, so that means 6 to 10 cats in 1 year's time. But there is a mortality rate, and that is why we probably don't have more cats. I know that it sounds like the number of cats living outside is a lot, 82 million is a lot, but there is a mortality rate. So when there are kittens born, about 50% of them or more, as much as 75%, die before they ever reach adulthood. So there is that factor, and that is not atypical. That's a factor that's, you know, carried out, a fact of reproduction that's carried out within wildlife populations. The issue with
because the survival is so difficult for them.
The survival, and just it's not just that. It's just typical that's kind of usually why there's a litter of five.
Oh,
because it's just kind of part of the process that they know that they're going to reproduce several kittens, because probably only two of them, one or two, are going to live. But in your case, as you said, that where humans come involved, they have a better chance of surviving, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think that there's a lot of terminology I'm not really keen on. And that was one of the big reasons that Alley Cat Allies formed, is that we wanted people to understand these cats and to find, and we think that people do understand them. We think that they have an affection for them. They have a lot of compassion. We also know that there's a great deal of altruism. So other people, just like you, Susan, are trying to help the cats that have come up to their porch. Some of them have been brought in that have become socialized. Maybe they were younger, they were kittens. But many people are trapping and taking these animals to veterinarians. And so we really embrace that. We applaud that. And I think that where the issue comes in is what you said. Is that the reality is that you feed a cat, and with some people that call us say, well, within 1 year, that cat number has, you know, quadrupled. And so they don't want more cats. They want to stop and control the reproduction, but they don't want to do that lethally. They want non-lethal means. They want humane means. And that's really the essence of Alley Cat Allies, is that these cats can live around humans. They can have a bond with humans. You obviously are bonded to her. What's her name?
Her name is Wendy.
Wendy, you're bonded to Wendy, and a lot of people have that relationship. I have that relationship with the feral cats. There's a colony that lives in my backyard, and they were in the neighborhood, and they're living out their lives. A few of them I can touch now. I can't pick them up. So I have the veterinarian come to my house, Dr. Girth, and she waits for me to trap them, and then I call her. So I have to withhold them. It's also very emotional. You know, when you have an animal that you're very bonded to, and you have to withhold food in order to catch him and wait great for the veterinarian, you kind of become quite yourself wrapped up in it, and it can be a very emotional thing. But what's even more emotional is that when you're caring for those cats, and then you find out that sometimes it happens literally overnight, that animal control has come and trapped and taken those animals away, and they don't hold them for what's called a stray period. They don't have to hold them, even though people think, well, they hold them for 3 to 5 days. When you've lost your cat, you think that you have 3 to 5 days. If they trap cats and if they deem that they are fractious and they're unsocialized, they can deem that they can be killed right away. And many of those feral cats, many of trapped cats, now we know that cats that go into trap can act feral. They get scared.
Oh, sure.
They're very fearful, so they act feral.
Right.
And they're deemed unsocialized, and so these cats are killed right away.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tragedy. And every time I go to the shelter, which I occasionally do if I have a lost cat or, you know, I was bringing the kittens there, you know, it's a terribly sad experience to walk through those shelters and see those little cats there, and they're reaching their paws through the bars, and they desperately want someone to take them home.
They want them to take them home. And I think the other thing that we have to understand within our shelter system, which is now one of the major programs for Alley Cat Allies, is to examine and address the very system that's supposed to help cats. And that shelter system is in all parts of our country. There's probably, you know, several thousand pounds in shelters, and even private shelters that are nonprofit, operated by a board, an appointed board, they have contracts with animal control. And cats that go into this system, cats that go into any one of these facilities are killed, and they're killed at a rate of 70% of all cats are killed.
I mean, and this is horrific figures when you think about, I mean, you have some figures on your website, and you're talking about thousands, and I don't know if you can name a thousand, how many are killed per year in terms of thousands?
Well, we don't, and I think that's the other thing. The best research available is about a decade old, a little bit over more than that, and it was this research that was carried out was by the individuals that are a part of that shelter system. They, you know, nonprofits and government entities, and they are the ones that have deemed that 70% of cats, it's a very high rate, that are killed. But at the same token, one of the things that we're advocating for, Alley Cat Allies as an advocacy group, is that there be mandated record keeping. So there's not very many states that have record keeping for you and anybody else that lives in your jurisdiction to be able to call up and get the actual statistics. It might be very difficult for you to do, depending on where you live. And the only states that we know are Illinois, North Carolina, and Virginia. And we have posted some of those on our website. But if you were to call, say, Kansas, and ask for the state of Kansas and Topeka, the government, to provide all of the facilities there, all the animal facilities, with their data, you wouldn't be able to do that because it doesn't exist. And we believe that it should exist. We believe that the public has a right to know, and that there should be a disclosure, a public disclosure of everything that's happening, all animals brought in, and the disposition of all animals in every shelter in this country.
Well, I agree with that. What about organizations such as Humane Society, ASPCA? Do they keep records?
Well, if they run a facility, and the ASPCA does run a facility in New York City, and if that state requires records to be reported, records to be kept and then submitted, then they have to do it by law. So that's the case in Virginia, that if there's a facility in Virginia and they have anything to do with animals, whether they're a private facility or a public facility, they are mandated.
So in other words, these shelters and rescue groups, there's a lot of rescue groups out here too, and these are run by donations, so they're not state-supported. Nobody has to keep any records unless there is public policy, unless there
that's
are
right.
laws, right?
Unless there's that's exactly right.
Oh, this is frightening.
It's frightening. In the case of Illinois, it is required. And so all facilities, whether they are government, county, city, county, or whether they're private, or whether they're a small rescue group, even if you don't have a facility, you're supposed to keep records. So, but in the case of everywhere else in the country, that policy doesn't exist, and we want it to.
Well, I agree. And let's just go back to the trap, neuter, return topic
sure.
for just a moment. And because you mentioned humane box traps, and if you could tell us a little bit more about what is it, where do people get it, and also what do people do if they want to get some type of funding to help them with these feral cat colonies?
Well, it's a very simple procedure, and the box traps can be, the information about where you obtain them can be found at alleycat.org. and we have a list of equipment that we feel has been tested out, that we've used over the years, and that we feel comfortable recommending. And it's a very straightforward. There's some that are better than others, but the point is that the box traps are what you want to obtain. And in some cases, though, the local feral cat organizations that may be in your neck of the woods provides those traps for loan. So they also provide the instructions on how to use them, and that's at alleycat.org as well. So you want to know what you want to set up a plan. You want to set up a procedure to where if you've identified the cat and you have identified a clinic where you can take them to, and if you don't know of a clinic, we have a network, and it's a database of people and organizations and veterinarians that are providing services for feral cats. And that Feral Friends Network is at alleycat.org. And I believe it's alleycat.org/response. And you can fill out a little form and type in your zip code, and you up pops the, or actually I think it's not, it doesn't come up automatically. It's emailed to you, the list of places in your area. So you will have the box traps, you'll have a plan to trap the cats that you're feeding. If there's five of them, you want to organize around hopefully trapping all five at once. And then you have found the clinic, and so you make arrangements for the day to take them in. They usually typically have you trap the cats at night or very early in the morning. And if you have withheld the food the day before, then you don't have to worry much about the anesthesia. About they're going to have surgery that day, and they the cat recovers in the trap that afternoon and that evening. And that is sometimes at the veterinary clinic, or they might have a program to where the caregivers, the trappers, pick them up at the end of the day and hold them overnight in a safe place, like a laundry room or something, and then you return them the next day. You let them back out of the traps at their colony site, at their habitat.
Okay, let's go over that part a little bit more about why do cats have to be returned to the same colony site. And the colony site is really where they've been living for basically all their lives.
That is their property. That's their home. And anything other than that, that would be very dangerous. They would not know where they are, and they would probably try to get back home, and they probably just wouldn't make it. It would be a horrible tragedy to take cats, trap them. And you've heard that, like everybody knows, like, oh, yeah, Uncle Joe used to trap cats because he didn't like them and he'd drive them somewhere. Well, please don't do that. That's first of all, that could be considered abandonment. But what's happening right now with the returning them to their home, as you said, the territory that where they've been living, the property that they know, that is their turf. And so they know it quite well, and they know it so well that even when I release a cat back to their property site, to their habitat, they usually go directly to where they hang out. They know which porch to run back to.
Let me ask you this. Okay, which porch to run back to? There's a number of issues involved here. Someone has to continue to feed them, and that brings me back to the funding issue. Because are people just feeding them out of their own resources, or is there funding available for these cat colonies or anything like that?
Well, our research so far has shown that there's 22% of Americans are feeding cat right now, and 42% have fed a cat at some point in their life.
Okay.
And so that 22% of Americans, from what we know of, and there's been some studies on this, they're paying for that food out of their own pocket. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't some programs, and there are more and more programs that are growing and available to people, but most people buy the food themselves. Now, when it comes to the other fee, as you said, the cost of spaying and neutering, which is another cost, just that alone, many of those programs that I mentioned on our network, our Feral Friends Network, they're subsidized. They're considered low cost. A handful of them might even be free.
Well, you know, when I went to take care of Wendy, I had to really pay for it myself. So
Was it considered low cost?
Well, it was considered low cost, but it wasn't that reasonable. By the time I got done with her, I think it cost me close to somewhere between $70 and $100.
Right, and you're right. In some places, that would be considered low cost. In other places, more like $35. But the funding of this, I believe that this is the biggest need, and this is the biggest challenge for Alley Cat Allies, is that right now the the methodology that we spoke to that's considered the status quo, which is to take cats into, if cats are trapped and taken to shelters, they're going to be killed. And there are donations supporting those very shelters. Many shelters that are privately run and asking for donations are killing these cats, and in fact killing 70% of all cats brought in, not just feral cats. And so we're asking that there's funding. If there are programs created and if they're funded by a city or a county, that there be money put aside for spay and neuter, that it be directed towards those, including feral cats, because of the reason that you said, that there are people that are caring for these animals with their own dollars, and if they are feeding 5 cats or perhaps 15, that's going to be a lot of money if you have to trap them and have them spayed and neutered.
Oh, absolutely.
That's one of the reasons that people don't always spay and neuter. They don't want to stop feeding the cats, and they care about them, and they don't want more litters of kittens. It's not that they're hoping for more litters of kittens. But there is no program that's going to help them in terms of offsetting the cost of spay-neuter. Even if it's low cost, it still costs.
Right, it still costs. Now, in my case, here's my situation, because I currently am living in an apartment, and I've been thinking about moving for several years, and I'm thinking, well, what will I do with Wendy? Which is why I took her and had her spayed, neutered, and tried to bring her into the house because I thought I could take her with me, but that's not going to work. So if I eventually do move, there is a fellow that I know who said he would take in the feral cats. He has an area, I'll call it an area, not his yard. He has an area where he has it fenced off, and he has homes situated there for feral cats and stray cats that he has straw in there, and he goes in there and he feeds them every day, and, they would be contained. I'm thinking, is that a good idea to take Wendy over there?
It's essentially a sanctuary, if you will.
Right, but it's right in the middle of the city. I mean, it's far, far away from where she is now.
Well, I what we recommend to people, and this is, we do get phone calls like this, that someone's feeding a cat or a few cats and they've already had them neutered and they've been living at their residence for a number of years, and so has the cat, and they actually have organized a way to take the cats with them. And what's that called? What that is called is relocation. And so there are options to where, if you follow our steps of where you are going to trap the cats, transport them safely, and keep them confined in a pen. And we even have pictures of these pens. One of them is called C&D enclosure, and that they're kept in this enclosure for about a month. Some people keep them in there, 3 weeks, but I recommend 4 weeks, and they're fed there, and they have a litter box. And then if it's in a new area where you have something maybe similar to where you are, or a townhouse, and Wendy could be released. Now, that's assuming that the new place would be, have a setup that we're describing. In which case, though, we also know of people who have moved and they have someone in the neighborhood that's very sympathetic. In fact, usually in my neighborhood, it turns out there were several sympathetic people. And there was a cat that I trapped and had her vaccinated and spayed. And she lived out her life. And there were 5 neighbors that fought over who was going to take care of her. And she never went inside. She got very, very ill at the end, and she went inside the last few weeks of her life. It showed that she was kind of just lost her feralness, if you will, and was a little weak. But she lived outside and lived on different porches in the same block her whole entire life, and everybody adored her.
Well, that's a wonderful, happy story.
Well, but I think it's what's happening all over. I mean, this is there. Certainly, we don't have the statistics, the research to show you this, but we have 19 years of anecdotal evidence to show that people have called up, and they really, really, really care for these cats. And usually, they're not alone. Certainly, that doesn't mean that there's the perfect Mayberry. Was it Mayberry where they had the beautiful name? Nice small
yes.
town. It's certainly not the case all over the country in every neighborhood. But I don't think it's impossible, and I think that the idea of community really hits home when you have a neighborhood of people that are compassionate and obviously get along, and that means compassionate towards animals as well, in this case, feral cats.
Well, that's true. I couldn't agree more. But let's go back to this issue of the animal control shelters and what is going on there with the killing, and then one of the things you talk about on your website is killing as opposed to euthanasia, and what is the difference, and how do you reconcile all these cats being killed on a regular basis all around the country and probably the world, and how do you reconcile what they're doing with anti-cruelty laws?
Well, I think that you, right there, Susan, have hit the nail on the head. I mean, I think that what we have is a system that's in great disparity with what the public really wants. And one of the reasons that we say it just like that, that we believe and know that it's in great disparity of what the public doesn't want, the killing, is because we asked. We conducted a national survey, and one of the questions we asked Americans was the question, if you see a cat outside, what do you think is the most humane course of action, to trap it and take it in where it'd be killed or to leave it where it is? And 81% of the people answered to leave it where it is.
Well, and, yeah, I mean, who wants to take them to a shelter because they'll kill them?
And I believe that's right. And I believe that what we're looking at is a system that is broken. Catch and kill is a thing of the past, but yet it seems to be the status quo, the policy that we're kind of unfortunately stuck with, and we want that to change. We want there to be social change and policy change to where we can see through that. And I believe that the reality of that, getting past this point of where we're at, is that killing is cruel. We don't believe it's ethical. Most Americans agree with that statement. That's why so many people have developed these programs. And your experience with your cat, Wendy, is one experience, and there needs to be more programs that help more Susans help more Wendys. And that's why there are so many nonprofits now. There's more than 200 nonprofits that have developed in the last two decades that have specifically organized to help feral cats. But those are private entities. And what we would like to see is that there be a change with the government entities, and that those programs are a testimony that people want something different.
Yes, you are listening to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morell, and today we are talking with our very special guest, President Becky Robinson of Alley Cat Allies, and she is in the lovely state of Maryland near Washington, D.C. She's talking to us here on Pet Lovers Lane about kitty cats and all of the problems that outside cats have when they're trying to survive on their own in this world, and also stray cats and some of the difficulties they face, not just in their environment, but also with public policy. And Becky, what is the likelihood that some of these public policies are going to be changed to benefit cats in the near future?
Well, I believe that the likelihood is very strong. Alley Cat Allies has 200,000 supporters, and there are people all over the country who own cats and have great concern about protecting cats, whether they are the cats in their homes or cats outside. And we also know that there's cat lovers. And keeping on top of the issues facing cats is really, really important to a lot of people. Now, we've set up an opportunity for people to be notified by email, particularly, of issues that are affecting their community as these issues arise. There's a very simple network that we've created called Feral Power. If anyone goes to alleycat.org and signs up for this, these alerts, they can take action when they're notified, of whether it's writing their legislators or their animal control agencies. That's just one opportunity. But the way it's going to change, the way this policy is going to change, is when people speak out. And we want to give that opportunity. We want to mobilize people. We want to give them the opportunity to help them voice their concerns and voice their opinions.
And who are they speaking out to?
Well, they're speaking out right now. A lot of these policies can be changed, can be set on a state level. That's how Illinois and Virginia is. And we want more of those policies that we'd be able to promote and initiate and see that the legislators vote them through. And then the same on local fronts, on individual municipalities have opportunities to make change.
So it all involves getting involved with politics.
It is some politics, but there's a lot of other opportunities as well. When there are groups, and there are 200 groups, 200 organizations, and probably another 200 programs that are through other humane societies and other organizations, and they run. They need help. They need volunteers to help with feral cats. And we know that people want to help them, and we know that there's been change, and we can measure that change, because when Alley Cat Allies started in 1990, there were no feral cat groups, and now there's hundreds. And so there's a lot of spay-neuter clinics, and there's a lot of attitudinal change. There's a lot of minds and hearts that have changed, and they see and embrace the fact that these cats should not be and cannot continue to be treated like vermin. They are individual healthy animals when they're neutered and they're vaccinated, and they can live out their lives, but they live everywhere. They live on campuses. They live in our cities. They live in rural areas. And so making this change, I think, is just a matter of time. I think that if we have to organize more people need to come to us and sign up, and we want to be that vehicle for them, because the legislators and the decision makers, the policy makers, will listen to the public. And we're at that crossroads now where legislators are starting to pay attention to the fact that they can no longer do more of the same, that it's ineffective and it's not going to be accepted.
Well, I agree with that, but I have to tell you, you know, I'm in Michigan here with Pet Lovers Lane, here with WHFR.FM. Although we have a very, very large pet community here of rescue groups and people who are very interested in promoting the welfare of animals, I was very disappointed when I tried to find help for the feral cats in my community.
And you were alone.
And I was very alone, and so even calling local rescue groups and veterinarians and people that I knew, there were virtually no resources in Michigan that I could find locally to help me. And so I was very, very disappointed. And I know there are a lot of enlightened people who would like to do it, but we just haven't bridged the gap here in Michigan in terms of reaching out and being organized and resources and availability to help people when the need arises.
Well, and I think that you've hit on something there. I think that there is still a tremendous need, and that's all the more reason to not only through your means right now, your vehicle of Pet Lovers Lane, is that, let's use this as a call to action, that Susan and anyone else that wants to help get something off the ground, even if, you know, there's a lot of people that are just catalysts, and sorry the pun, but they are, and you can be a catalyst and get something off the ground and launch it, and somebody else usually ends up coming in and volunteering and helping you run it.
I guess I'm going to have to be that person.
Well, you might have to be that person. One of the things that we have is a motto in our office, and people call and they ask where help is, and we wait and listen to them because we completely sympathize. It's very frustrating when you're all alone. But in the end, we say tag, you're it, that those cats have found someone, and there is someone who cares, and it's you, and you're not really alone. You just haven't found those other people. And let us help you with that, Susan. There are other people in your area. Let's see what we can get going.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Great, but we're running out of time here on Pet Lovers Lane, and I hate to go because, you're such a great guest, Becky, and you're a wealth of information on this issue. But let's talk a little bit more about Alley Cat Allies, about your organization, of how listeners can get involved with your group. I'm sure you accept donations, and let's talk a little bit more about connecting with Alley Cat Allies.
Sure. While we are based in Bethesda, Maryland, we do have a wonderful website and we have a wonderful network, and we have supporters all over the country, and we have activities in different parts of the country that are ongoing that we're also adding to, that we're adding other locations. So if you're in Chicago or Baltimore or New Orleans, for example, or Washington, D.C. area, we have a program called Every Kitty, Every City. And those programs the local people take the initiative, where we've created some supporting materials and we've created a workshop that's kind of a standardized workshop, and others can take that workshop and make it their own and set up an educational outreach once a month. in their at their library or wherever location's best, and that's very simple to do. That's just one example, but as I said, you really want to stay informed of the issues happening in your area, and you want to network with others, and that's through our electronic alert system called Feral Power, and we ask you to sign up for that. Maybe you just want to find out, maybe your listeners just want to find out where there are these facilities and these clinics, and these Feral Friends are most of them are organizations and veterinary facilities, and maybe you just want to plug yourself into one of those and help. Maybe you want to trap the cat that you're feeding and take it there. That's a good place to start. But we are, I would say we're the lovers of cat lovers. How's that?
Okay.
And if you have a cat, or if you're feeding a cat, we applaud you and we want to help you. And we also know that if a lot of people have concerns about their shelters, they may even be donating to their shelter because they want to make a difference and they want to have an impact on the lives of animals. And we applaud you for wanting to make a difference and check into how you can make a difference for that shelter, how to improve it.
Okay, and give your website one more time.
It's www.alleycat.org.
Okay, and I urge everyone to go to the website. It's a fantastic website. It has great information, great resource information, all about cats, all about the history of the organization, about their research into these very important cat issues, the animal control issues, anti-cruelty information, and how you can get involved with the Trap Neuter Return Program, and a lot of definitions about cats and all of these issues related to what we've been discussing here today on Pet Lovers Lane, and more about how you can get involved with Alley Cat Allies. Right, Becky?
Yes, that'd be great. We have all kinds of information there for you, if you're a caregiver, for your neighbors that might not be the feeders of cats, but living amongst them, and how to make things copacetic for everybody. And please visit us, alleycat.org.
Okay, any special events coming up right away?
Yes, in October is the launch of the annual National Feral Cat Day, and we'll have materials. And if you're interested in receiving that poster and the materials, please let us know. You can sign up at alleycat.org, or you can call us at 240-482-1980.
Okay, very good, and I definitely want a poster. I'll be talking about that right here on Pet Lovers Lane. Unfortunately, we are out of time, so we have to say goodbye to Becky for today, but thank you, Becky Robinson.
Susan, it was great being here. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for joining us here today on Pet Lovers Lane, and she is the president of Alley Cat Allies, and keep up the great work, Becky, and we will be joining you, of course.
Just an alley cat. Sure ain't no fat cat. I'm just an alley cat.
Thank you for staying tuned to Pet Lovers Lane, located at 89.3 on your FM dial, WHFR Dearborn. I'm Susan Morell, and Pet Lovers Lane is a news, information, and talk show about pets, for pet lovers, and for pets. Now we turn to our calendar for June 2009. June is Adopt a Shelter Cat Month. If you don't have a kitty cat, or you already have one or more, and would like another one, check out all the wonderful and beautiful cats at the local shelters. Also, June 26th is Take Your Dog to Work Day. That would be fun, wouldn't it? Be a treat for you, a treat for the dog, and a treat for the whole entire office, especially your boss, right? And there are some ongoing events out around and about Metro Detroit and the wonderful, beautiful state of Michigan. All Creatures Universal Life Church has a Bring Your Pets to Church Day every Sunday at 1 p.m. That's at Dunkin' Dog Spa at 27911 Five Mile Road in Livonia. The contact phone number is 313-563-0162. The Canine Castle Save a Pet Rescue has a meet and greet every Saturday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. That is in Clinton Township at 35135 Harper. The contact telephone number is 586-792-5187. For Better Independence Assistance Dogs, they are holding training classes for dogs every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings at four locations in Mount Morris, Milford, Howell, and Whitmore Lake. And the charge is $95. The contact telephone number is 517-589-0477. PAWS, P-A-W-S, PAWS of Michigan, is holding a meet and greet every second, third, and fourth Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in the city of Woodhaven at the PetSmart at 23470 Allen Road. And let's see what else is going on around the state of Michigan. The Pug Rescue Network is holding a meet and greet on Saturday, June 27th from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. at Solden's Feed and Pet Supply, that is in Bay City at 4140 Wilder Road. The contact telephone number is 989-667-4844. And Michigan Retired Greyhounds' Pets are holding their 14th annual summer picnic on Sunday, June 28th from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. at Mayberry State Park in Northville. And there is no charge for that lovely event, and you might walk away with a brand new friend. There are a number of adoption events around the state. The Humane Society of Livingston County is holding an adult cat adoption special in May and June. HSLC Shelter, the cost is adult cat's adoption fee has been reduced to $25 for the entire month of May and June. So $25 is a good deal. And usually they have shots and other good things that go with them. Maybe they might be spayed or neutered. The contact telephone number is 517-552-8050. Fairy Tales Cat Rescue is holding an event on Saturday, June 20th from noon until 4 p.m. at Pet Supplies Plus in the city of Jackson at 1094 North Wisner Street. And what else is going on as far as adoption events around the beautiful state of Michigan? The Buster Foundation Pit Bull Education and Rescue is holding an event every second Saturday in Ypsilanti from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Mantis Pet Supply at 1145 West Michigan Avenue. The Buster Foundation Pitbull Education and Rescue also is holding an event every third Saturday at PetSmart in Northville at 17677 Haggerty Road and every fourth Saturday at the Petco in Ann Arbor at 3537 Washtenaw Avenue. And Fortunate Feline Adoption League is holding an event every Saturday from noon until 5 p.m. at the Petco on 9 Mile and Gratiot. And the Greyhounds of Eastern Michigan are holding numerous events. The first Saturday from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. in Ann Arbor at the Petco at 3537 Washtenaw. The second Saturday, every Saturday from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. in Westland at the Petco at 35725 Warren Road, and every third Saturday from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. in Chesterfield at the PetSmart at 51347 Gratiot Avenue, and every fourth Saturday in Taylor from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Petco at 22263 Eureka Road. And again, that is Greyhounds of Eastern Michigan. The Itsy Bitsy Small Dog Rescue, that sounds like a lot of fun, is every Thursday. The Itsy Bitsy Small Dog Rescue, every Thursday from 10 a.m. until 7 p.m. and every Sunday from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. That is in Beverly Hills at Premier Pet Supply at 31215 Southfield Road, and the contact telephone number is 248-885-0224. And we have some other ongoing events around the great state of Michigan for June. The Ingham County Animal Shelter is holding a Mongolian barbecue fundraiser, and that sounds like very interesting if you like barbecue, on Thursday, June 11th at 5 p.m. in the city of Okemos at BD's Mongolian Barbecue at 2080 West Grand River Avenue. The contact telephone number, 517-676-8370. PAWS of Michigan is holding a millionaire party at Texas Hold'em. Well, I guess it's a millionaire party called Texas Hold'em. That will be taking place place on June 13th from 4 p.m. until 2 a.m. That is in the city of Trenton at the Woodhaven Lanes at 20000 Van Horn Road. Contact telephone number is 734-556-2164. Animal Blood Sources International is holding a canine volunteer blood drive in the city of Adrian on Saturday, June 13th from 9 a.m. until noon. And that's at the Kelly Veterinary Clinic at 4108 South Adrian Highway. There's no charge for that. And the contact number is 517-263-0236. Roofs for Woofs is holding a Putts for Mutts. And that's Saturday, June 13th. That sounds like a golf event in Waterford at the Pontiac Country Club at 4335 Elizabeth Road. And the charge is $35 per person. Golf carts are included with 9 holes. So get on over there. The contact number 248-396-9233. The Ingham County Animal Shelter is holding a Best Friends Pet Care adoption event on Sunday, June 14th at 12 noon. And that's in the city of Lansing. That's at the Best Friends Pet Care, located at 2920 West Airport Service Drive. Contact number 517-676-8370. The Puppy Mill Awareness Meetup is being held in Livonia on Sunday, June 14th at the Dog Art Auction Workshop, and that's from 1 until 4 p.m. at Dogtopia. I don't know what Dogtopia is, but it's at 38741 Ann Arbor Road. And the Animal Blood Resources International is holding another canine volunteer blood drive in the city of Dexter on Saturday, June 20th from 9 a.m. until 12 noon, and that's at the Village Animal Clinic at 7935 Ann Arbor Street, and there's no charge. That's a free event, and the contact telephone number is 734-426-8550. And we have one more event that we will mention today on Pet Lovers Lane, and that is the Humane Society of Livingston County is holding their 15th annual golf outing on Friday, June 20th at 9 a.m., and that is in the city of Heartland at the Majestic. It's a $100 charge, and that includes unlimited driving range, a box line, lunch, dinner, and prizes, so it may be well worth it. The contact telephone number is 517-552-8050. And that's all we have for today, right here on Pet Lovers Lane. I am Susan Morell. Pet Lovers Lane is located at 89.3 WHFR.FM. We are on the internet. You can hear us from anywhere in the world. 89.3 WHFR.FM. We are making waves. Pet Lovers Lane is a news information talk show about pets, for pets, and for pet lovers. So hope you enjoyed the show. We broadcast bi-monthly, so please join me again on Pet Lovers Lane.
Spooky Dinois is the finest cat in town. Her silky black fur is like an evening gown. And much to every tomcat's delight, she sings her heart at every Saturday night down at the alley where all the cool cats go. Spooky Dinois can do a catwalk so feline. Whatever your plan, she's sure to undermine. The band is swinging to a barrel beat. A tough little kitty who lands on her feet. Swishing her tail, she purrs, "I'll see you after the show." Watch out, cat, for those green jungle eyes. She'll pamper your dream and make you realize. You're begging for mercy and hoping somehow that you can resist her sultry meow. Spooky Dinois, do-da-do-ya, doobie-doobie-down, meow, meow.
The Michigan Humane Society is a private nonprofit organization serving the animals and people of Metro Detroit. They receive no government funding and assist more than 100,000 animals each year. They need your support. Visit them on the web at michiganhumane.org. You can make a difference by adopting, volunteering, or donating. That's michiganhumane.org. Raise a puppy for Leader Dogs for the Blind, and you will change a life. Volunteer puppy raisers are needed to raise future leader dogs for the first year of the puppy's life. Loving homes are also needed to house a leader dog, mom, or dad. You may choose to raise a golden retriever, a German shepherd, or a lab. Dog experience is not necessary. You can be part of the life-changing experience at Leader Dogs for the Blind. Visit the website for more information at leaderdog.org.
WHFR is proud to announce that the Farmers Market in Dearborn is now open. The Farmers Market has expanded to 27 vendors specializing in fresh produce, flowers, and other unique products, and will operate Fridays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. through October 30th. The market has changed locations this year and will now be in the area surrounding Bryant Library on Michigan Avenue in downtown West Dearborn. Meat sellers, several bread vendors, and four new produce stands are included in the new lineup. Music and children's activities, plus cooking demonstrations by the HFCC Culinary Arts Program, will also be a part of the fun. For more information about being a sponsor of the market or having a booth at the market, call the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce at 313-584-6100. The event is sponsored by Henry Ford Community College, your best choice guaranteed. Are you stuck at a dead-end boring job with no chances for a promotion? Or maybe you don't have a job at all. If this sounds like you, it's time to stand up and start marching your life in a new direction. I'm talking about getting the education and training you will need to stay ahead in this changing job climate. Henry Ford Community Colleges have been educating our local community for over 70 years. With more than 100 different programs and nearly 1,000 different courses, there's something for everyone at HFCC. To learn about all the different areas of study at Henry Ford Community College and about how HFCC can save you time and money with financial aid, a tuition freeze guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a credit transfer guarantee, visit them online at www.hfcc.edu or call 1-800-585-HFCC. Registration is going on now for the 2009 fall semester. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice guaranteed.